So, welcome to this gathering. Mary Gleason is with us this morning, and she is part of a team of consultants from the Unitarian Universalist Association Stewardship Program. And she was invited here by the board after a thorough process of vetting people in a response to a problem here, a very good problem, and that is our problem of growth. And the questions that the board looked at and has been discussed in many committees and amongst you all is, where is this growth leading? You know, what's going to happen to us? How do we handle the growth? Where do we want to be in 5 years or 10 years? And these are questions that need to come from fellowship members, or the answers need to come from the fellowship members, and discussion over the next year or 2 years. As to if we do decide where we want to be in a while with this wonderful growth we're having, what does that mean to our activities? How do we get there? And so we invited Mary here, who has had a lot of experience, is a Unitarian Universalist, and has dealt with many, many Unitarian Universalist organizations dealing with whatever problems, to give an outside look at what we're doing. So she's been here for a couple of days, starting at a difficult time with her plane being damaged by hail and being stuck overnight in Chicago, and a few details. So her time here was short and a little more hurried than we had hoped for. But anyway, she wants input from the membership and will be giving us some input from what she has seen and observed from us. But the important thing is that as many people as possible be part of this process. And over the next year, when we're talking about our goals and hopes for this fellowship, that everyone be part of it. So I'm going to turn this over to Mary now. And I will say that after she leaves later this afternoon, and we'll be sending in an official written report on what she sees and suggests in a couple of weeks. So, Mary, it's all yours.
I was going to say good morning, good afternoon. So Ann covered a little bit of this, but I do want to just take a step back and tell you a little about who I am, why I'm here poking around in your business, and a little bit about the process for an assessment visit so everybody can appreciate the final product. We won't be singing, so I will move this. Unless you're really bad, then I'll sing. But my papers are out of order here. So the process for the I am Mary Gleason. I'll start there. And I have belonged to East Shore Unitarian in Bellevue, Washington for 16 years now. And that has been my first experience in a UU congregation. And we have grown from, in that time, from a congregation of 350 to 700 members. So growth are us. We, about 4 years ago, we had a youth group that had 75 youth in it. So we feel your pain. We get it. When things start bubbling up, it's just such a wonderful problem to have. My children have gone, two of my children have gone completely through the RE program, and it's been a phenomenal experience. One of the things about being a UUA stewardship consultant is you have to have been active in stewardship issues in your congregation. You have to have the understanding from the other side of the table of what's being asked of people, what it means for them to commit their time, and what it means to try and lead within a UU congregation. So I have served on the board. I have led the annual budget drive. I have participated in executing a capital campaign drive. I have worked on the endowment drive. I have really touched all of those kinds of things. In my other life, outside of the UUA, working with congregations, I work with nonprofits on many of the same issues as an independent consultant. and I help them with their governing boards, with their strategic planning, with their fundraising, planning meaningful retreats, that kind of thing. So I kind of do this a lot, and I hope that my experience will be helpful to you as well. The process of an assessment visit is that I come on site and I get to meet with leadership and I get to meet with a lot of different committees. And what I'm looking for is just a sampling of where things are, what are the biggest challenges people are looking for, but I'm also looking for what are you doing that's really, really right? And how do you do more of that? Too often we're busy trying to do things that are maybe not at the top of the priority list, and then there's all this movement over here that you can lose track of when you're mired in the details. I'm not good at this in my church. This is not something you can do from the inside. In fact, you know, when I speak at my church, they say, well, that's one opinion. So having an outside perspective can sometimes feel a little icky, but I applaud you for taking that leap. What I do with all of that information is I compile it into some findings and observations, which I'm going to share with you this morning, and some higher level recommendations. And if I could sum up this visit in one statement, it would be, who are you at this time and what are you called to do? If that's the only recommendation that comes out is to have you answer that question, I think you're going to be really on a good path. There's so many things that I heard about that were challenges this weekend that really are just symptoms of not having answered that question. So I'm going to read these to you, and then I'm going to open it up for comments and questions and further discussion. Okay? I'll just say, make a note here too, that I wrote this last night, and I just know it made sense at midnight. I have no idea if it makes sense now. So first of all, I want to thank everybody for their patience with Mother Nature, American Airlines, Hertz Car Rental. I really lived through Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and I'm sure I saw Chevy Chase around there somewhere. But despite all of the challenges, I was able to meet with quite a few people, and you were very generous and very forthcoming in sharing information with me, so thank you very much. And I also want to thank Ann Cowan, who hosted a group probably a couple hours longer than she was expecting to on Friday night till I got there, so thank you for your patience. The number one thing that I heard was the desire to grow, or the observation that you're growing, and quite how to wrestle with that alligator. What do we do first? Do we get a bigger place first? Do we get more members first? How does all of this work? Let me just see what I can. So one of my observations that I'd like to share is, you know, when you say, what do we need to do to grow? And I heard that a lot this weekend. I will give you two answers to that question. And the first one is, understand that people join movements and churches because they share those values. So the first answer is to lead with your values in everything you do. The second answer is that growth occurs because you are doing something really good and others know about it. Lead with your values, do it boldly, do it proudly, start the buzz. So the questions back to the congregation are, what are you all about and how can people find you? As a beacon of liberal religious thought and action, your presence in this predominantly conservative area in a state that is chipping away at civil liberties is a challenge to your values and your principles. In short, it is an important time to be a UU and an excellent time to consider your shared vision for yourselves and your community. So I met with quite a few groups here, and I just would say that overall, working with leadership and the Board of Trustees, there I was pleased to see that there's a good mix of long-term members and some newer members, and all with a willingness to discuss change and to lead from that sense of possibilities. Their primary question to me is, how do we move forward? What comes first? And all of that, and I will talk about that in the recommendations. In the Finance Committee, I found that they wear two conflicting hats. One is to steward the budget, and one is to run the annual budget drive. They are completely different skill sets and completely different approaches to how to be a good steward. The first is this fiscal steward means that you really look at that budget and you make sure the money's being handled correctly. As a stewardship committee, now this is the truth, don't laugh, but fundraising has nothing to do with money. Zip, zero. Fundraising is all about, is the result of really good relationships. And so when you talk about budgets, you talk about line items, and when you talk about stewardship approaches, you talk about the impact and the difference you make together as a community. Because once again, people join and give to and become an enthusiastic part of things that share their values. So you talk from two different perspectives. So you can guess what my recommendation is going to be in just a minute here. The other thing that we talked a lot about in the Finance Committee is the annual budget drive materials, and more specifically the suggested fair share giving guide. And I will include a copy of the one that I'm encouraging the fellowship to use. And the fair share giving guide is a document that allows people to make their giving decisions based on their hearts and their checkbooks. I must be very sweet this morning. And it lays out various ways for you to think about your giving as a percent of your adjusted gross income. And you can find where you are on the chart, and you can decide, is that where I want to be? And you can think about, what would it take for me to move forward on this chart? I think the biggest problem with the chart is the way that it's laid out. It starts from lowest to highest giving considerations, which means as you use, we're being asked to consider how we're going to move to the right, and that kind of goes against our grain. We don't go to the right very well. But anyway, the idea being, and I realize I'm not making complete sense here, but the idea being, how do you talk more about the impact you want to make and the differences you want to make together, and have that be what informs your giving decisions as opposed to a budget? So I will have more details in the written report. I want to share with you the results of your 2012 annual budget drive. And this is done in a quartile analysis. And now I might borrow that. Thank you. And a quartile analysis is when you take your annual budget drive results and you divide the dollar amount by four. And the first quartile tells you how many households did it take to give the first 25% of your budget, how many households the second, the third, and then the fourth. And this is what yours looks like. And I don't know if everybody can see it, but I'll walk you through it. So in the top quartile, in the first quartile, five households, or 8% of the membership, contributed the first 25% of your budget. The second quartile, six households, which was 9.5% of the pledging households, gave the second. 13 households, or 20%, gave the third, and 39 households, or 62%, gave 25% of the budget. What this says is that you have 11 households contributing half your budget. which, as you can see, is kind of unhealthy. The ideal says that 10%, that the first quarter would come from 10%, the second from 15%, the third from 35%, and the fourth from 40%. And I want you to note, I said ideal, not normal. I've never seen it, but it's a goal. And, but this is a nice, healthy balance. What this says is, if these guys are good friends and they go out to dinner together, they must drive separately. If they get into an accident, you're in trouble. Right? So you can meet at each other's house, but no overcrowding. We want to make sure everybody can get out in case of fire. The important thing that I want people to know is there is no judgment about who is in which category. There is no reason to assume that people down here aren't making a reach, aren't doing their very best, and there's no reason to assume that people down here had no idea they were down here and they're willing to reconsider. There's no reason to think that people in the top two quartiles are making a reach, or that their reach isn't just beyond all expectation. So you want to make sure you don't judge. This is to inform you so you can see where you fall. In my report, I will give you the ranges of gifts size so you can see what this is. The other little fact is that the average gift is about $1,500, and the median gift is $1,080. And so one of the other signs of good health is when the gap between those is really small. And I would say you've got about a $300, $400 gap in there. It's not the end of the world, but it would be nice to see it smaller, because it would mean there are as many people above the median as there are below. So again, I've never seen it, but that's another way to look at how are you doing. The bigger the gap, the more you have a teetering pyramid that won't be sustainable. Can I just keep this one in? Will I cause friction? I might. Yeah. I don't want to cause feedback here. Thank you. Questions about that before we go too crazy? The quartiles are the number of households that represent each 25% increment of the budget. Okay. This is the final outcome. Can you give him the mic?
The one detail I thought might help is that you basically arrange the donations by largest to smallest, and then that top quartile, when you come down the list, you stop when you get to 25,000, and then you count the number of households, and then basically, you go on down through.
Thank you. And it's a little uneven because you want to make sure that similar gift amounts are counted in the same quartile. So if one person gave 1,200 and another person gave 1,200, and the dividing line is in the middle, all the 1,200s go in one or the other, so that it's clearer delineations. Yes.
I didn't think to bring it with me, but I've done it not by households but by individuals, because we have quite a few households where there's one giver and quite a few where there are two. And it seems to me it makes a difference if you have two people in the household who are members, but if you have one who is and one who is not, it has some difference in how they're going to think about their contributions. I think it looks a little more balanced if you do that, but a little closer
What's
to your ideal.
What's represented here? Do you have 63 pledging households?
Yeah, the 63, and I think it represented 83 individuals.
Right. And I wouldn't worry about that. I wouldn't worry about how many individuals, because the pledging households are the real number that you have to work with. And we had a little bit of this discussion yesterday, and I will just say that when we break it out by how many people that represents, that's really called consumerism, and you're purchasing a service rather than contributing generously of your treasures, which is a very different way to look at that. One more, and then we'll move on. Larry would like to say something. Wait a minute. That's right. This is
morning breakfast. And I don't know how to present that, but it would be good, I think, also to present some kind of analysis of how we're contributing in our time and talent as well.
So as it
stewardship
Exactly. And stewardship is much bigger than money, you're right. This just reflects what's happening in the budget. And what I think is helpful is, as you use, one of the number one questions people have is, what's my fair share? And I would resist answering that in terms of how much money you need. Your fair share comes from how much you value this organization and what you're willing to do to make sure that it continues and has what it needs financially, so you have a place to steward, so you have children to raise together as a community, all of those things. One of the other recommendations for stewardship, too, is to present the budget as a program budget, so you can see not how much salaries are, but the impact you get when you spread them out over religious education, over worship and music, over ministry and caring, and all of those other things. And you see the impact for having made your giving decision. Okay. So the music committee, slightly enthusiastic, just a little. They kind of like music. They talked a lot about the musicale when you all come back together, which sounds like a blast. And it sounds like there's good outreach to anyone who wants to participate. And as the mother of musicians for whom that is not their calling, it is so lovely to know there are places that think my child can play their violin in public and be welcomed. Don't tell her I said that. Yeah. But I like the fact that there were a number of ways musically and not just in worship for people to participate. There are the drumming circles and all kinds of other small groups that seem to have popped up organically or around particular kinds of music and affinity, and I just think that's lovely. I talked to the Long Range Planning Committee, and it sounds like they have already concluded that it's impossible to move forward with any kind of a campus plan or building recommendations until they know more about what it is you need this facilities and these grounds to do for you. This is an excellent example of why you need to lead from a strategic vision, because your building, your staff, all of those things, your budget, are tools for how you realize your vision. So you gotta know what you need it to do for you. An example that I can give you from my own congregation was when we talked about rebuilding the religious education, it morphed from our vision that we had to go through first to say, we can make that building do a lot more for us. We want to be able to welcome congregations for the homeless, where 12 churches take up to 30 men 1 month for 1 month. And that we really wanted to be able to do that. So we built a facility with a shower, a large gathering space, a small kitchen, and we found out that people really wanted to rent that space, and it became really a cool thing for us to do. but it came from the belief that we could be doing a lot more to serve underserved people. We also renovated an old house on the property to bring in mentally ill clients who were in transition. We didn't even know we wanted to do that till we had this conversation, and it really informed what we were going to do, how we were going to use those facilities, and it was significantly different than just replacing some old RE buildings that needed to go. That's just an example of what that conversation can do for you. So again, the Long Range Planning Committee is looking for a vision that will guide them. Religious education, nothing happening there. I understand that Corey has taken a position to move on, and so as the committee said, had you come last week, we would have had a different conversation with you. But I want to encourage everybody to remain calm. You will be fine, and there have been a lot of people wanting to know what's the process going to be, what's the next step, how are we going to get somebody in there, and, you know, I'm not the RE consultant by any stretch of the imagination, but I would warn that it's just too soon to know. It's brand new information. So give leadership a chance to come up with a plan and get back to you. Once they stop crying, there's a core group of dedicated RE teachers, and there's really some really nice outreach to other adults in the congregation to support the classes. More teachers are always appreciated. I promise to put that in there. And there is a strong committee in place. Let's see. You have some 5 different breakdowns in age groups. You have your nursery, your preschool, your kindergarten through second grade, third through fifth, and sixth through ninth as of next year. I have one person going into high school. I was particularly enamored that the children have opportunities to work with other faith traditions on different projects and to participate in community service projects. And they also have some really age-appropriate ways to participate in learning how to be good stewards of their own congregation, whether it's in the garden or they're helping to paint a room or all of those things. It's so important to do that. Let's see, next year they're going to be doing OWL in the middle school with Catholic youth. So again, it's just another opportunity to hear new perspectives, to work together in tandem, and to maybe even break down some stereotypes about what UUs are in the rest of the world. Communications. This committee is focused largely on the public face of the fellowship and has spent the past year really reworking the website so that it's more informative, easier to find information, and can serve as a communication tool. I've been through the website. I found what I was looking for, and that's always a relief. Lots of good stuff on there. If you haven't tooled through your new website, you should do it, because there's quite a bit of information on there, and you can probably learn some new things about your congregation. It's really well thought out. I even played a little bit with trying to come up with keywords, and dang if it didn't take me there every time. But the committee says their next challenges include expanding the fellowship's presence in the community through other vehicles, and that expertise is not currently on the committee. So they're looking for people that can help them place articles, advertisements, things to promote the fellowship. But again, I would say, what is it you're going to tell them once you got their attention? Because this is a great way to lead with your values. It's a great way to say who you are, but you haven't quite crystallized it yet in a way that is ready for public consumption. Okay, programming committee. What a big challenge they have to find meaningful services 34 weeks of the year. That's a lot. But I was happy to hear that they're not burned out, they're not fried, they enjoy each other's company, they work beautifully with the minister to come up with how they're going to proceed, and one thing that they offered is that they really seek to balance between intellectual, spiritual, artistic, and social justice offerings. So they really are a very thoughtful group. You should bring them cookies. They work really hard. And one of their big accomplishments in the last 4 to 5 years is having put some structure into each service so that conveners have an easier time, and when people come in, they're not, they have some idea of what to expect or can ease into a different kind of presentation. Membership committee, they do a great job of welcoming visitors and newcomers. They make every effort to capture names, children's ages, and email addresses. And as people return, they are sure to invite them, and they've created some opportunities for people to come and get to know the fellowship a little bit more. Even if you're not new, it's kind of fun to go to those things and introduce yourself around and see some of the new energies coming in. One thing I noted, though, is that new members, when it's time for them to sign the book and they've made that decision, they are not asked at that time to sign a financial commitment form, and I think you're missing a really big opportunity there. When people are in the emotional space of having made that decision and are excited to join, they know there's expectations and they're ready to fulfill them. So I encourage the membership committee that their discomfort with asking is not the new member's discomfort with being asked. And there's a difference. And you don't want to send the message that they really don't have to give, or it's not that big a deal. It's one of three very big areas of expectations: time, talent, and treasure. So there's nothing, no reason to hide from that. Be proud of it, and then respect whatever decision they make. The other thing that I noted is that there's little or no follow-up with visitors who do not return. And the reason that that's an issue is because you don't want to assume they didn't like what they heard. It could be that they need some ministering and caring, and it's another opportunity to lead with your mission of being a congregation. How can we help? What do you need anything? Social Action Committee, another group of very busy people who do a great job of representing the fellowship out in the community. I was thrilled to hear that when people work at the Happy Kitchen, they have t-shirts or aprons that identify them as being from here. It's great that people are out there volunteering. It's even greater if everybody knows that you're from here. It's just an easy, no-brainer way to say we share the same values that you do to people who didn't even know you existed. Let's see. Committee on Ministry. We had a very good conversation yesterday, and their role is to help strengthen the quality and health of ministry for the fellowship. The committee is involved in the dynamics and concept of congregational shared ministry with both lay ministers and clergy, and in recent years, they have also produced an annual review of the fellowship. Because it doesn't matter what perspective you're taking. If you're talking about membership, if you're talking about ministering, if you're talking about what to do with your building and grounds, the same frustration exists of, to what end are we doing all of this? So it took on many, many forms, but the truth is, who are you and where are you going will really help a lot of these things to fall into place. And the Committee on Ministries reports for the last 4 years, their number one recommendation and conclusion have been the same, and that's that need for a shared vision. So now we'll get to the recommendations. And my number one recommendation is, and I'm going to take this report home, I'm going to pretty it up a bit, put in some correct English. I seem to have had a love affair with run-on sentences last night. So I'll clean this up and get this right back to you. But the number one recommendation is going to be make this report available to everyone. Put it on the website, email it, have printed copies available for those who prefer. And then the second part of that recommendation is that as individual members, even if you're not in a committee or you're not on the board, please read it. Bring your questions. Ask, engage in discussions, and really let this provide some good discussions amongst everybody. You know, communication is I often hear that nobody told me. I haven't heard a lot of that here, but it's not uncommon that I hear a lot of people told me they're waiting to be communicated to. So what I want to encourage you all is don't wait. Communicate to leaders and say, I read this report. Can we talk about this? I want to know more about what this means. What are the plans? That kind of thing. Take equal responsibility for knowing what's happening. The second recommendation is to split the Finance Committee and the Annual Budget Drive Committees into two separate groups that don't overlap. Because your budget folks are doing a great job, and they acknowledge that the stewardship part is not their strong suit. And so make them two separate committees would be my number one recommendation for those things. Let's see. And to make the program budget available for the annual budget drive. And as I said, breaking it down into those five areas of church life, so you can see when you give your gift, not that it keeps the lights on, but that it makes religious education possible, it makes Sunday worship possible, all of those things that are really important to us. And then the newly formed annual budget drive committee is very strongly encouraged to use the UUA suggested fair share giving guide that's available on the website, and I will attach a copy to my report. And then for the membership committee to ask new members to fill out their financial commitment form at the time of signing the book. I think you will be pleasantly surprised at how easy that is. But the overarching goal is to understand what it is you do really well and really have those hard discussions about where you're headed and what you want to be known for. So my number one overarching recommendation, if you throw all the others out, I hope you will listen to this one, and that is to engage in a vision process that will lead to solidifying your vision, revisit your mission to make sure it's in alignment, and then to do a thorough and quick strategic plan. And, you know, if I had a nickel for every time everybody said, oh, we got to do that again, I would say, yep, you got to do that again. And the reason that these things do or do not work is how you use them. If it goes up on a shelf, you will be no further ahead. But if you bring it into every committee meeting and every gathering and you say, where are we going? How is what we're going to discuss here tonight going to help us incrementally get closer to that? And at the end of each meeting say, did we stay on task? Are we moving forward? It will really help. And then you can celebrate all through, all along. I would also say that congregations are encouraged to do this every 5 years because the trend is that within 5 years, half of your congregation has been here less than 5 years. So they have no buy-in, they don't understand what's going on, and this is a chance to let all those new voices be heard. And in fact, I heard from Michael that you had 30 people sign the book in 15 months. Something like that. So you've got a whole group of people that are brand new that haven't been here a year. And you want to capture that energy, and you want to know where they want to go, and you want to have it inform what you're doing here. No sense in meeting if you don't know what it is that you want to accomplish over the long haul. So I will just tell you Mary's rules. Can I borrow that mic? Thank you. Or not rules, but Mary's definitions for strategic planning and vision and mission and all of those things. And I'll just make this as brief as possible. This thing has been giving me exercise all weekend here. So, a vision statement answers the question, why? Why is the community and this congregation better 5 years from now because you're here today? You get extra points if it's written as positive manifestation, as if it is so. Your mission statement answers the question, what? It says, what you are today. It's a short statement. You get extra points for goosebump meters. If it, you know, it should be very values-laden and say succinctly who you are. It's just enough to make people want to check you out and know more. And then you have your strategic plan. And that answers the question, how? And it's, how are you going to realize your vision? So my recommendation is going to be that you engage in a series of discussions in the coming fiscal year in very different ways. I encourage sermons and presentations and small groups to come together and talk about not these things necessarily, but your values. What does it mean? What's happening in your community? How do we feel about that? All of those things that you want to talk about so that when you come back all together, come back to a workshop called Searching for the Future. And at that point, you will have had some time to really think about this, and I could lead you through a series of exercises that I promise you at the end of the day, you're going to have a vision statement that informs your work, is inspiring, you're going to have a mission statement, and you're going to have identified your top goals for the next 5 years. And then after that, the committees and the various groups can take a look at those goals and submit within a short time frame what they can do to help move the congregation over 5 years to realizing their vision. Because religious education is the responsibility of everybody. Caring about each other is the responsibility of everybody. All of those church areas of church life, you all share. So how are you all going to help? Make sense to people? It really can help you figure out and answer so many of the questions you all have about where are we going and what are we doing. Everybody still awake? Okay, because the fun part of the presentation is over, and now we can go into your questions.
Question about our way to get at the strategic planning part. So we have the long-range planning committee, which has been essentially, over my course of being here, engaged in basically strategic planning. And they do that by trying to sort of take the pulse of the fellowship every 5 years or so and coming up with a new sort of, I guess, strategic plan. But I'm not sure how much vision and mission play into that in a very outward way, but I think that certainly that's what they're mm-hmm. trying to do is get all those things together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of detailed questions on surveys about, you know, what do you see as the important role of the fellowship and so on and so forth? What do you get out of it? How much of that should we keep doing, and how much should we sort of refocus that into something different?
I am so happy you asked that, because I get to get on my soapbox for just a minute here. But surveys are efficient, but they're not effective. They're one-way communication that can be totally interpreted 100 different ways. So I can say community is the most important, and you can say community is the most important, and we could be talking about two different ideas of what community is. And I would really encourage you to think more about what's effective than what's efficient, the process really is what you want to observe. That's what's going to lead you to the richest understanding. When you have a strategic plan and you don't have a shared vision and people haven't seen it come together and recognize their values in it, then what you really have is a wish list in your strategic plan. But when your strategic plan comes from what the congregation said it wanted to do together, then what you have is a priority list. And it doesn't mean that other things can't take place, but it does mean of the church's primary resources, that's where they're going to be focused. And so I have seen the materials, and I have asked the random question, okay, you tell me you have a vision, what is it? And nobody knows. So I'm really encouraging that it not be developed in committee, that it not be something you do because you took a survey and down in the strategic side of things and decided what it all meant. I think SurveyMonkey was invented by a UU. I'm convinced of it. We really like to go for efficient. We're a very intellectual group, but the way you make a difference really isn't in your head. Your head is in the hows. It's your heart and your values that are in the vision and the mission. And when you lead with those, the rest become much easier to determine. Yes, ma'am.
This is my perception of the fellowship. I'm Molly McGoy. I've been a member about 6 years, and so everybody can disagree with me and jump up and tell me that I'm wrong. I feel like there's people that are very strong leaders in a very narrow, siloed area of mm-hmm. the fellowship, and we've had wonderful board chairs that have done everything that's required of them in that, but I feel like to do something like this successfully, we would need to have strong leaders, and the rest of us would need to be strong followers. And I'm wondering if that's a challenge for other UU congregations and how we can identify people that will be strong leaders in these areas and help the rest of us be strong followers and not just go, oh, well, that's I'll pick on you. Oh, well, that's Pat's deal. She's going to take care of it. So I understand what you're saying about the process, but I think our fellowship needs to take a turn mm-hmm. and stop saying, well, this is going to be this individual's, realm, and then the rest of us will just walk away.
Anybody want to answer that? How are you going to do that? I like your statement about strong followers. I will say a couple of things, and that is a lot of congregations has a core group that have a lot of power, and they can only have that power with your permission. And if you want to make a difference, you got to participate. If you want to make sure that what you value is a part of this, you got to participate. And I think it's up to each person. They talk about, well, I put out an email and nobody responded. I was looking for volunteers, I was looking for RSVPs, and nobody responded. Because you've got to do the emails, but emails are efficient. Effective is when I tap you on the shoulder and I say, we've got this thing coming up, and I loved when we served on that committee last year. You had some things that I'd never thought about before. I'm hoping you're going to come when we have this discussion, because I'd like to hear more of your thoughts. You're going to tell me no? Probably not as likely as if you could ignore an email. And so it's up to everybody. You're all leaders in terms of inviting each other into the conversation. And be sure to invite the people you don't agree with. Not so that you can hear their opinion, but you can hear why their opinion is the way it is, and deeply listen to each other. Somebody's not going to like what you come up with. And the bottom line is, that's okay. What's not okay is to not have the conversation. When you vote on, or not vote, but when you affirm your vision statement and along the way here,
you want it to be overwhelmingly accepted and embraced, but you don't need to have it unanimous. And I keep reminding people that the fifth principle is that of democracy, not consensus. And consensus can you want consensus, that would be lovely, but not likely. So you want the majority of the people and the vast majority of the people to want to go that way. That makes sense? And allow people to be unhappy. That's okay. Yes, Pam. Pam.
I really like the fact that the question why is equal to vision. And I think that word why is often put into an intellectual sense. And you mentioned that this, in this sense, is of the heart and of our collective vision. And I think that's a thing that happens with our UU congregation being such of a broad spectrum, coming from more the intellectual side, more the either spiritual or heart mindset, mm-hmm. and that some of us, like myself, who have been here for so long, are learning to embrace all of this and wouldn't go anywhere else because we want all of that. So I'm seeing that word why with vision, but I would like to see it as a feeling more than a intellectual question like we often have in our daily lives. I guess I'm wondering if you have any way to help us look at that word why in that vision sense.
Yes, I do, and I can put some, if you decide to go into the searching for the future, we can certainly structure that more. But I just want to back up and say, when we ask people to give of their resources, their time, their talents, and their treasures, we're asking them to commit the most illogical actions a human can commit. Giving away your money makes no sense. Giving away your time makes no sense. So why do we do it anyway? Go to those places. Go to what inspires you to give of your time, what inspires you to give of your treasures. And I promise you, what you're going to find is a value statement. That's where I find people who share my value. That's where I can go and feel safe and welcomed and loved. Those are things that cause us to act irrationally. And if you see those things in a why and a vision statement that answers why, because we've got something here that others can benefit from, because we care and steward for each other and ourselves, whatever that vision statement is, there's probably not going to be one dang logical thing in there. And you're going to do it anyway. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Mike Benella. earlier you were mentioning how at your congregation they have refurbished a building and it's being rented and used. And a point that I made recently at our at one of our meetings regarding pledging, mm-hmm. is that I feel that this facility that we've created, it's so beautiful and it's so functional. And I saw the income that it has gained us as $800 last year. And my heart sank. I just felt like, my gosh, why aren't we renting this place out every weekend mm-hmm. for different events and activities? And I wonder if your report will touch on that at all in terms of giving us some guidance on how to utilize our largest physical asset, which is the property and the building and how gorgeous it is and functional.
So. You're right. It's beautiful. I have to say, I got to walk around this morning, and I did not want to come inside. Nothing personal. I didn't want to come inside. But no, my report won't touch on that. What I can say is that's another symptom of not having a shared vision and that you can put into a plan. So I will tell you, there are some guidelines that say the health a healthy congregation gets about 80% or a little more of their annual operating budget from their members, from their pledges. Congregations that get 100% from their pledges are not stable. So you do want to have some mixed revenue bases. And if you add in your fundraisers and all of that, they might be a separate line item on your budget, but they still came from the membership. So you want to find diverse ways. What I would say is that what you really want to do is know what kind of renters you want to attract. Mm-hmm. How does this building continue to play out as serving your values?
Which committee would you recommend? I mean, would this be a PR or, I mean, is it a marketing issue? Or, I mean, where does this fall in terms of our leadership? And who do you think, what committee or group of us do you think should be looking at this more intently?
We don't know that yet.
Okay.
You got to know where you want to go. And I promise you things like that will become crystal clear at what you want to investigate and who are the logical groups to do that. And I will say I am a very big fan of ad hoc groups to come together, investigate a quick thing, and let it go. So one of the things we did talk about today or this weekend as well is how to get more yeses. And my number one recommendation is by not asking people to join a committee, but giving them a job with a beginning, a middle, and an end. You need committee leaders because you need somebody watching all of that. But I'm going to let Michael answer some of that. I think you wanted. Did you want to respond to what he was saying or to what I was saying?
Well, it's related.
We have our own Phil Donahue here this morning.
Big Phil. my question, I think, is related to what Mike Bonella just asked, and that is, will your report give us some suggestions about the order in which, or the kinds of decisions we should be sure to make right now, and maybe the kinds of decisions we ought to postpone until we have the vision and the mission statement and the strategic plan in place? I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that we are a group who appreciate heresy and respect it, and so I'll try it out on the group. when somebody quits, it's a great opportunity to take a look at what that person did and does, mm-hmm. and what that job did. So, you know, my specific question is, would you suggest that we immediately go ahead and start the search for another DRE, or take advantage of the fact that we don't have somebody in that position? I wish we did, but we don't. And I just wonder if that's a kind of decision that ought to be made in the context of a whole lot of things that we might want to do or could do, and where it might fall in the priorities.
So I hear two questions in there, and one is how do we make decisions until we have this product, and then the second thing is specifically a decision around the DRE.
Yeah, as an example of whether that's
example.
A kind of thing that ought to, that possibly should wait until mm-hmm. the rest of the things in place, or if it's not the kind of thing that should wait.
I would not want to masquerade as a consultant on religious education, so that's totally out of my bailiwick. What I would say is talk to the district, tell them what the situation is, and see what they would recommend. They're the experts on that kind of thing. The second part is, the first part of the question about decisions which go on hold and stuff like that, I would say that you got to run your day-to-day operations, and that's going to take some decisions. And you know what those common sense things are. I would say things like the long-range plan certainly goes on hold. What to do with your building goes on hold. How are we going to attract members goes on hold. Because, as I said before, if you know where you're going and you're doing it really well and others know about it, that'll take care of itself. And that will come. That will need a specific strategy, in and of itself. So you don't know that yet, but there are certain things you know. You know you've got to
make certain maintenance and adjustments to the building, that sort of thing. But that's not the same as coming up with a plan for how you're going to use this campus, because you got to know what it is you want it to do for you. That makes sense? Yes.
I want to thank you, Mary, for bringing up all these conversations. And as we're talking, the biggest thing I noticed is we need to be in a circle. We have to be able to see each other. We have to have our hearts connected. It's very frustrating not to be able to see everybody's face. And so when we get into these serious discussions or these sessions and talking about our vision, let's make sure we're all in a circle so we see everybody, because, you know, there's a voice, and I was watching people listening, and you can get a lot from that, but there's a heart-to-heart connection when we're in a circle. So I just want to remind us, when we go into this, we need to be in a circle.
That's great. And hopefully there'll be opportunities for you to do this in smaller groups and to think about things from many different perspectives. And then all of that would culminate in this workshop, but the workshop doesn't work if it's the first time you've thought these things through. So,
Well, I'm Laura Benella, and I think my comment kind of goes along with that and what you just said, but I want to go back to your comment that you were saying about the fifth principle and the voting, and my husband was laughing at me when you said that, because we had a big discussion about that last night. And I personally am kind of anti-fifth principle and anti-voting because my vision for the congregation is not a place where 51% of the congregation make a decision and say, tough, 49%. So, you know, I think some people are happy to hear you say that, but I would like to put in a little caveat and make sure that nobody ends up with that as the message without talking about everything we do first to make sure that it's way, 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 way higher than 51%. Because, you know, we live in a country where 51% of people vote for things, and we're not thrilled about that, are we?
And we're stuck, yes. that's a good point. And I do think I mentioned you want enthusiastic acceptance, but 100% is unrealistic. And I would say that if you have a 51% vote on something super important to the future of this congregation, you don't have enough to go forward. And your bylaws have what percent of the membership denotes a quorum on certain kinds of votes. But I would also say what you're going to vote on here is to enter into this searching for the future process. You're not going to vote on accepting the vision because you're going to have participated in having crafted it. And there's some details in all of that, but you should see it reflected. And when you talk about people showing up and participating in all of those things, the bottom line is the vision will belong to who's in the room. So make it a priority. Be in the room. But once that vote is taken, that will be the driver. But if it turns out that you have an even split down the middle, then you don't have a vision. And I agree with you. Okay.
Again, thank you for being here. I'm Kathy Hedge. And the question I had, because from the perspective of you getting to talk to the members of the groups and look at our materials, how are we doing as far as balancing our efforts to include all age groups? So it's not just one age group that's sort of handling it, the leadership and leading us forward. How well are we including all age groups? Not the, well, the children, I know we're including them in RE, but our young adults as well.
Yeah. I don't know that I can give you a succinct answer, but I heard a lot of it in very delightful ways. So when I met with social justice, this is only the third time I've had a social justice leader under the age of 70.
You know, and so that tells me that there's a new guard coming, and that's appropriate. It doesn't mean the old guard did anything wrong, but you want to keep it vital, and you want others to feel like they belong. And the 70-year-olds are still on the committees, so I don't want you to think they went anywhere. But it's taken a long time to make room at the table, for the most part. I love the fact that RE has a way for seniors to participate as room grandparents and be prepared to jump in and help. That is such a great gift to the children, and I think to the seniors. Sorry. I feel like a horse. I need a tail. I'm trying to think of some other examples. I'm thrilled to see on your board that there's diversity in age and in longevity in the congregation. I think that's really important. You know, if you want to know how to attract or to retain your new members, you've got to get them engaged right away. And you should engage them in their passions. So ask them, what is your bliss? What is your joy? Hey, we've got three groups doing something along that line. Have you checked them out yet? Get them together. But I would say it's hard for me to say overall, but individually, there's some really good examples. Mark.
I just had one observation that I think everybody is aware of, and you probably are too by now, but one of the things that affects our group probably more so than some is the fact that we have a very high rate of flux because of the military and the university community within. People are always, you know, coming here to K-State as professors. A lot of times they'll get their first job and then they look for something else and go elsewhere. The military answer is, the military situation is really obvious. We get lots of people that are military mm-hmm. people move all the time. I think one of the things we need to do is learn how to embrace that and make sure that it's not a negative thing that you know, we're always having this membership, you know, that's just going up and down. And so anyway, that's just an observation.
I think that's a great point. And I would say you should plan for your attrition rates. Corey, did you want to say? Oh, okay. So let me just respond to this. And just say that plan for your attrition rates. You can know what it is. Take a rolling 5-year average and know what it's going to be. Because I will say that as much as you have all these new members, your total membership numbers are stagnant. It feels like you're growing because they're bringing children, and it feels like they're growing because there's so many new faces, but you're not seeing the faces that have moved on. So if you're serious about wanting to grow and you want to take a numerical look at that, you're talking about bringing in 50, 60 people every year to show an increase, because you got to allot for that attrition. But because it is consistent, because of the base, because of the university, I think you can plan for that and know what growth is. If you see that you're not attracting from those populations anymore, that's a different question, and know what those numbers are. That helpful? Thanks.
I had a few comments, actually, that kind of all roll into one, but in reference to the, you know, this group is very intelligent, I mean, from a lot of us are from the university and such, and then there are those of us who aren't quite as educated and are young mothers. I think I'm the youngest RE parent, actually, and it's just very intimidating for people such as me to come in to this fellowship because of that. I mean, I basically had to force my way in and learn to get past that intimidation, because this is a very intimidating fellowship in that respect.
When you are talking about growth, that was brought up at the board retreat last June and has sort of been our focal point all year, is growth, growth, growth. How do we do growth? And it sounds to me, and I wanted to just double check this with you, that you're actually asking us to look inward and sort of make this a place that we are proud of and that we have a vision as to what we're doing. And that's going to be a shift, I think, for the board. I might be speaking out of turn, but because I think there has been so much like looking out, and I think it might make us uncomfortable to look in, So how do you suggest that we have that shift to looking at how we're making this a place that attracts people versus us focusing not on what's going on here, but on what's going on out there?
Piece of cake. What I would say is your membership numbers, just like your annual budget drive, are a symptom of what's going well and how you're being perceived and what value you bring. And the best way to attract the spouse of your dreams is to know yourself and to lead with that person so that when you meet that person, you're being accepted for who you truly are. Because what good is it to have a spouse who doesn't respect you or you don't feel like yourself in that relationship, right? It's the same principles. You got to know yourself, and then you got to be it. And you got to be it loud and proud. Whatever it is, you got to be it. It's got to have action. It's got to be obvious. And I think then you will begin to attract people who share those values. Is that helpful? I saw a hand over here. Somebody wants a divorce? Okay. Yes, sir.
Dick Beeman. This is just a response to Amy's comment that she just made about being intimidated. I'm pretty sure that it's true that the people in this group that are more highly educated don't think they're any smarter than people who are less highly educated. And if they do think that, they're wrong.
I love it.
We
all bring value, and sometimes we don't even know what that is. I will tell you, when I was asked to be on the board of directors or trustees for my congregation, and I saw who else was on the board, I said to the minister, why me? I mean, anytime I get invited to sit at the table with intellectuals, I am sure they've got the wrong address, because not my strong suit. And he said, well, let's just see how it goes. And I found myself in a meeting one night where they spent 20 minutes on that or which in a statement. 20 minutes. And I finally said, I will blow my brains out if you don't just pick one. And the minister leaned over and said, that's why you're here. He needed somebody that would just move the conversation along. So we all have value, and we can't let anyone make us feel dumb without our permission. Other thoughts? Okay, Tom.
I've been impressed just listening here, the distinction between a board of directors and a board of trustees. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's a fairly significant distinction now that you mention it.
Yeah, and sometimes people do use them interchangeably, but trustees tends to be really when you're entrusted in like a membership organization, like a congregation, and that has a different connotation. And I think a lot of high-end arts organizations have trustees because you're trusting them with the collection, a very valuable collection, and they've got to understand that it took the entire community to purchase those things and whatnot. And a board of directors tends to be in an organization where there's maybe not members, but they're providing service in the community, whether it's a human service agency or something where there isn't a collection or a membership that they're being asked to guard.
I was just thinking more in terms of the interpretation by the members as to what their role was, whether they were there to direct or there to be stewards. Maybe it should be board of stewards or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the interesting thing, distinction between working with nonprofits and working with congregations is nonprofits tend to have a board of directors
and they make a lot of decisions, and they move forward in a way that informs the organization this way. And working with congregations, especially UU congregations, the board's work is informed from the grassroots up. So your board could go write a vision statement. It would be a lot quicker. But if you don't own it, it's no good. It's as good as not having one. But in a nonprofit setting, that's where it would come from. So, yes.
Okay. You mentioned the process of the vision, mission, and strategic plan. What's the kind of? I didn't quite get an understanding what the time frame is on that, or how's that laid out.
Well, I think the time frame is up to you. Some congregations are ready to move more quickly, and you will know what that is. What I can do is delineate what I think are the steps, and then the board can take a look at, you know, the one thing that the trustees do have is the broader big picture look. If you're on a committee or whatever, you're not going to necessarily know what else is happening around the congregation and what some of the fiscal priorities are and that sort of thing. So the board can ask for input or whatever and come up with some kind of a time frame that would be reasonable. I would say make it what it needs to be. Don't rush it. But if, you know, people feel like we've been talking about vision so long, we don't need to have too much more conversation and that's widely shared, great. But I would say take time to create safe places to speak and be heard and to listen. And make those conversations around very specific questions that are values-driven questions about what it means to be a UU in this place at this time. You know, pick a newspaper article and say, what does this call us to do as UUs? Do we like it? Do we not like it? And how are we letting that be known? You can all share in reading a book. Those kinds of things are really helpful, and it can even be a novel, but it, you know, it's values laden and it promotes a conversation about a more desired world, then you're on the right track. Helpful? I don't want to overprescribe, so I'm trying to keep your options open. Well, my report is coming. I'm going to finalize it. I will send the report to Ann and to Scott, so your incoming and outgoing board president, and to the minister. And what I will do is I will ask them, just make sure I spelled names correctly and I heard you correctly. And then make sure that what I'm saying reads in English to you, and you know what I'm trying to say. But it's not to say, do you agree or do you disagree? And then when I hear back from them, I will finalize it and send it back, and it will be ready for sharing. Okay? Thank you very much for staying. I really appreciate it. And thank you for your hospitality.